Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Formed in 2003, Melbourne Ska Orchestra is an orchestra with a difference. Comprising up to 26 members, this juggernaut contains some of Australia's finest musicians and performers. Helmed by the energetic and charismatic Nikki Bomba, Melbourne Ska Orchestra are more than just a band. They are an experience to behold. The band's debut self-titled release resulted in sellout national shows, multiple major festival appearances, 3 international tours, and many awards and nominations. Their sophomore release, Sierra Killer Alpha, secured the band its first ARIE Award in 2016. Never shying away from a challenge, the band set a high bar by undertaking the mammoth mission to release a song every week for an entire year. The resulting 52 songs compiled into a 4-album box set, 1 Year of Ska, earned the band a second ARIE Award in 2019. Melbourne Ska Orchestra's live performance is explosive and infectious. Their unique take on the genre of ska has wowed audiences all over the world. Since 2013, they continue to release successful singles and albums. The band has won 2 ARIE Awards and has further been nominated for another 6. The band has won 2 Music Victoria Awards and has been further nominated for another 2. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Nikki Bomba from Melbourne Ska Orchestra. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in northeastern Victoria in the foothills of Mount Hoffman, a place called the Ovens Valley. That's where my house is. And I'm doing amazing, actually. I'm in the middle of mixing an album. And so that's my happy place.
And your nickname, Nikki Bomba, where does that come from?
I didn't realize there was a... A series called and a series of books called Bomba the Jungle Boy ages ago. And I had a roadie. I used to have a lot of hair and look like Animal when I was playing the drums and like a jungle boy. And it just one day he said, "Oh, it's Bomba the Jungle Boy." I didn't know what that was at the time, but it just stuck. And I liked the idea of musicians having characters, you know, like or nickname, that type of thing. I think it helps with the process of performance.
In what way? Why do you say that?
Because when you're on stage, you kind of step into a different medium in many ways. That you're the channeler of the energies of the music, and you're more like a conduit. And so, I find stepping into a role where this is my role to actually be the messenger or the ringleader, if you like, and having a character to kind of step into gives me a bit focused parameters as far as what to say and what to do, and that you could do things that are outside of your normal safety thing. But then when you walk off stage, you can get back to being, not that there's much difference anyway. I think there's the stage thing definitely where you step into it, and it's very much feels like a switch when the things kicks in and the band starts and the crowd's there and like with Blues Fest, you know, there's 6,000-7,000 people before you and you go, right, click, here we go.
So does that click happen before you walk on stage, appeared before, or as you step onto the stage?
It's a bit of both. I think it escalates. You kind of, I have a very kind of zen little ceremony before I go on stage, which is very relaxing, very calm. So I think the most important thing on stage is to be in a state of positive calm. And I think that's what you develop over the years as a performer, that you get rid of any anxieties or fears, and you bring in the confidence, energy, belief of that what you're doing is good and that you've been asked to play here because what you're doing is consistently good and you're maintaining that. And then, so that's a bit of a thing. And then when the lights go on and I say, you know, hello, that's another subconscious switch that kind of goes, here we are, we're flying off the cliff.
Hello, I like that. Ska Orchestra. Tell us about it. So how did that come to be? What is it exactly?
Well, ska music in itself is like, I think the best way to describe it is the folk music of independent Jamaica. I think that's the best way to describe it. And it was a hybrid. So in 1960, it was a hybrid of American R&B and the New Orleans and the Jamaican mento music, which is their traditional folk music. That came together in around the time of independence in 1962. And the music was formed. And so it became a genre that a lot of people connected with, whether, you know, you have all different genres and everything, and ska was its own thing. So that really hit the planet in 1963 with a song called My Boy Lollipop. And in 1964 with Bob Marley and the Wailers' Simmer Down. These were classic ska tunes that really put Jamaica on the map as far as ska was concerned. 40 years later, in 2003, there was a big group of Melbourne that were, you know, has ska bands and reggae bands. And we all came together to celebrate the 40th anniversary of ska. And so we put this band together called the Melbourne Ska Orchestra. Just basically, it's supposed to be just a one-off. We put the word out to see who was interested, and we were inundated with how many people wanted to be involved. And then we did the night. The night was a roaring success with about 300 people turned away. And it was such a beautiful experience. We said, we should probably do this again. And so that's really how the band started, just out of a labor of love.
Do the members rotate every time you join together, or it's the stalwart members that are always there?
It's a bit of both, actually. We have a bit of an A team that has morphed over time, only because from a performance perspective and a consistency perspective, it's good to have at least the same rhythm section and basic, you know, players from each part of the horn section, keyboards as well. So, but we have about 40 people really on the books, and so a lot of people interstate and overseas, because the nature of the Ska Orchestra is it's a very expensive beast to travel, and sometimes we just don't have enough money to fly everybody, especially with flights being expensive and accommodation and everything. So we have to, first of all, see who's available, and then work backwards based on the budget. Everyone that's kind of on the books or that's kind of been is part of like a soccer team, and sometimes, you know, people can't make the match, so the people on the bench come, or sometimes, you know, we try to do a rotating thing, and it's probably one of the hardest things in the band is what songs to play and what players to book.
How is it different to a normal orchestra, or is the concept the same?
No, it's very different. We have the same setup as far as our horn section consists of altos, tenors, baritones, trombones, and trumpets. We cover that spectrum, and then the rhythm section is obviously a standard ska band with bass, drums, guitar, keyboards. Sometimes two guitars, sometimes two keyboards, and then we have vocalists and percussionists and even razzers, people who kind of get the audience kind of revved up. But from a performance perspective, we don't sit down and just read notes.
Okay.
It's very much active, live, energized, mayhem-filled, circus-tinged experience.
And is there a conductor as well or not?
Well, I'm the conductor, but okay. not in the traditional sense. Okay. I'm more like the master of ceremonies.
Obviously, you do the covers of the great songs, and then you also create originals, correct?
Correct, yes.
And how is that creative process of the originals? How does that happen?
There are three or four key songwriters in the band. And as songwriters, you're always writing. I mean, I was explaining this to my sister the other day that, do you write for the album? But as songwriters, you're always putting up little ideas on your phone. And there's always, and you do have to please the muse, because it is a thing of like, if you are a dedicated songwriter, which is how all this happens. I mean, you know, any great band, you've known that band via a song that one of the song members of the band has written and has put the time in to write. So it always goes back to that seed of, and you have to actually be disciplined as a songwriter to be constantly writing. So when I write, some songs will fit the orchestra mold. Some songs will fit my calypso mold. Some songs will fit a singer-songwriter solo thing. And some of them don't even, you know, they're just songs that come out that might be for somebody else. But a good song generally can be adapted And if you write a good song, it can be adapted to lots of different genres. So when we were doing this particular album, it was a bit like, okay, we were ready to do the album. What have we got? As opposed to, oh, what are we going to write for it? You know, there was about 20 different ideas that were put into the pool. Me and one other guy, really, we kind of vetoed the ideas based on what the album should be sounding like and what direction we're taking. This particular album has got a spaghetti western tinge to it. So things that worked well in that genre, you know, had priority. And I'm still working on lyrics as well, and bits and pieces as we go, because we want to make it a bit of a concept album in that whole Ennio Morricone, spaghetti western. And we just got back from Mexico. We've been there twice and we were influenced by all the mariachi. So it's quite a beautiful palette to play with. And with an orchestra, you've got so many different ingredients for the recipe that it's more so, what do we leave in? What do we take, you know, what do we take out? What do we feature? And sometimes you have a tendency to put everything in, and it's like a meal that has too much information. So you have to be careful with what there, because you need space as well. Space is the magic number.
I've never heard this concept before. What is spaghetti western?
Okay, spaghetti western was a genre of films that was based around the classic cowboy, the cowboys and Indians kind of American John Wayne thing. But it was taken a step further. The Italian film industry started making a lot of films in this genre and having to overdub English on them as well. But then there were some classic ones like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Fistful of Dollars, Clint Eastwood, you know, these type of things. And those films were, the soundtrack was by an Italian composer called Ennio Morricone.
Yes.
And so
yes.
I think the Italian connection was, we call it Scargetti Western. There's definitely a sound, and there's certain instruments that get used, you know, tubular bells, harmonicas, timpanis, you know, old school guitars, acoustic guitars, accordions, and the orchestration is actually quite grand and classical in many ways. So it's not like your standard ska band, expansive, and you can really hear the sound of the room. So that's been the challenge here from a production perspective, to get that sound right. But it is very much a genre that you can look up, and the main musician composer that was from that world was obviously Ennio Morricone. So we get a lot of references from him.
What was the motivation to create in the genre for this project?
I think it was from our trip to Mexico. We were really influenced by the whole mariachi and how a lot of that has kind of influenced, because we like playing with hybrids. The thing about the Melbourne Ska Orchestra is ska has had many waves. It had the first wave in Jamaica, second wave in the UK in the 80s, third wave was in the States with bands like No Doubt and Rancid and Fishbone. And then I consider ourselves to be part of the fourth wave, which is international ska, which means playing with hybrids. So we play a lot with cumbia and ska, you know, funk and ska, Afro-Cuban and ska, African rhythms. And so this spaghetti western thing was a bit like, one of the influences from Mexico, our cumbia influences. And also that there was a sense of danger and rawness to that whole genre from a film perspective as well. Also from the plots and the themes and the storylines of those films were quite raw and emotional, and matched the danger element of ska. Because ska's it's on the edge a little bit. It's certainly not nice. There's certainly a sense of like things could go wrong all of a sudden. And we like that. We like, you know, flying by the seat of our pants. And so the whole thing just matched. And the idea of actually having something to hang an album on with the artwork and the lyrics and everything makes it a lot more enjoyable when you're actually making an album, because you have a brief. And so you have parameters. And with that, I think it helps the whole process.
How much of your time and the rest of the orchestra's time is dedicated to the orchestra and then your individual sort of projects?
I mean, it varies with the orchestra. Most of the members of the orchestra, we couldn't rely on just this to make a living. So most of us have either in the music world, they're either teaching or playing other instruments in other bands. Well, that's the main thing that most of them do. Some of them, you know, we had a acupuncturist. We had you know, people that you know, carpenters and all that type of thing. So it's very much people of the real world playing music as, if not 75% of their income. Mine is a little bit different. My main source of income is playing live with the orchestra and my other bands, but I probably spend most of the time in constructing everything, producing it, organizing all the sessions, doing the contracts. So I have a team that helps me with all the social media and booking flights. So I have a co-manager who's also the trombone player in the band. So it's important to have the team, because otherwise I'd just be on the computer the whole time. Most of it is, you could say I'm the captain and I'm driving the ship most of the time, but it's a very benevolent dictatorship. No, it's, there is a democracy involved, but there has to be a bit of a veto happening when, because there's so many different opinions and ideas that you're not going to please everybody. That's why I just have, at the end, I just have a smaller team, and it's usually me having an argument with one or two other people. So it's always for the good of the song, good of the song.
So naturally, you've mentioned that some people come and go. It depends on availability. What is the process when you've got your core group and then someone new is filtering in because someone else couldn't do it? Is it a re-teaching every time? Or what is that process of when new people drop in?
It's, we, like an orchestra, we have charts. And so any musician who's you know, has done their homework and everything should be able to learn charts, you know, hear the songs and learn their parts. And when we play on stage, we do have banners with Melbourne Scar Orchestra on them and everything. So it looks actually quite like an orchestra vibe. Not that we use that a lot, because a lot of stuff we're doing outside of, you know, they get off their chairs and move around. We've done gigs where we've had no rehearsal, international stage. We've just gone through the songs with the horn players, mainly horn players, in the room beforehand, and bang, we're on stage. And people have seen the band and know that it's not a static experience. You need to be moving around, watching what the other people dance moves are doing, look at the mic cues, and at the drop of a hat, things might go left or right or up or down, and you just have to be aware of that. So but everybody that's come on board gets it. And I think the people that want to join the band and have reached out know what it's about. You know, you can't help but be swept up by the energy on stage when you're on stage. So we're lucky that we have everyone that's kind of involved gets it, knows it, and also is appreciative of the fact that the beast of this size is amazing that it exists in the first place, let alone has any traction, let alone has won awards, you know, let alone travels overseas. And the only drama really is the financial thing. And sometimes I've lost money and had to access my mortgage and, you know, over the years, but it's kind of balanced out really at the end of it.
Why specifically is there a little rehearsal or little pre thing with the horn players compared to the other section of the orchestra?
Because mostly the other section of the orchestra is the team that we try to keep consistent. Like, we're putting together a tour now. There's like a Qatar situation where it's going to be too expensive for us to fly our Qatar players to Cairns, for example, because flights are just stupid at the moment. So we have to pick up another Qatar over there. But he's played with us before, and he knows the tunes and is very professional. So it's really the rhythm section is the most consistent. So okay, the horns is because that's why. That's basically why, yeah.
From the fans who've never been to an event or sort of experience it, they have this conceptual idea of a definition of an orchestra conductor, everyone all smart in their suit and ties, sitting in place, besides them just coming to the show. How do you break that definition in their brain of the barrier of what they think it should be?
I mean, when they see it, they kind of get it.
Okay. But
beforehand, if I was explaining it, we'd still do the suits and it still looks like a beautifully set orchestra.
Yeah.
But when we start moving, you just see what happens. I mean, I don't get to see a lot of it because I'm facing the audience, so I don't really see what happens behind me. But when I see videos and of all the things that we've practiced, it is a energized, positive performance that you cannot help but move, because everybody on stage is moving and is dedicated to making this particular performance an elevated harmonic experience. And it really is like that. And that's why I think I'm blessed with all the people that have come on board. I mean, really, I think there's only been one player in the whole 25 years of existence that kind of wasn't playing ball or ego kicked in and we just said, this is not how it works, you know, like it's all about the communal thing. And if you don't get a solo, it's kind of bad luck, you know. And if you want to get paid double what everyone's getting paid, I'm sorry, we can't do it, you know. So those things happen now, you know, but rare. It's only really happened in the days, but everyone gets it now too. So from a audience perspective, it's a bit like, I mean, from a crowd perspective, if I was describing it, I would say that it's a really uplifting, energized experience where there's lots of movement. We don't just sit and read notes, not at all. That's not the essence of the band.
So, Nicky, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of songs, what would those songs be?
I have 5 CDs in my player. And any of my family, my partner, anyone that knows me will know that this is the thing, right? I have my music that I wake up to every day, which is Indian classical music. And it's just a beautiful compilation with some Ravi Shankar and some Indian Carnatic singing. It's ancient and it really kind of sets my day. When I come home from a tour, I have the Studio One collection, which is everything from early stuff that Cox and Dodd did, you know, the Wailers, the Toots and the Maytals, Prince Buster and everything. It's a fantastic combination. That is my welcome home CD. Every time I have a meal at night, Mesa, look, my granddaughter will even tell you, come here. What music do we listen to when we have dinner every night?
Stan Getz.
There we go. No
getting out
of us. Then I have an album by it's a field music recording of music from Nigeria, and it's folk music, but it's communal, and it reminds me of why we sing in the first place, why we make music, is the sense of community. They're singing about things that happened in the community, people getting married, that they ran out of water, someone's going off to war, all these little, it's all in another language, but the sense of community that I get from it is timeless. The first album I ever produced was about a guy called Ross Hannaford and the Ross Hannaford Trio. And that for me is a timeless album. And he was also a bit of my guitar guru. When I play guitar, I try to channel him.
Lovely. So, Nicky, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
There's lots of things, but I'll just my mantras, which is, we all live in a series of bubbles. You and I are in a bubble right now. We're having this podcast bubble. And I'm dedicated to this particular bubble. I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not anxious about anything else. I'm not worried about something that's done in the past. I'm not worried about it. I'm trying to be really here with you. So when I finish from here, I'll go into my studio bubble and be into that. So we live in a series of bubbles, and even driving in your car, that's a bubble. Walking from here outside to hang the washing, it's a hanging washing bubble. It's about being dedicated to the bubble in your day. And then when you go to sleep at night, you go, wow, that was a very complete day. And sometimes you have to put yourself into a bubble. Like, you know what? I've spent too much time in this particular one. I need to get a bit of nature. Let's get a bit of a nature bubble. Dedication to the bubble, and which is my tattoo, which says, jar in every moment, which is the same thing, being finding the jar, finding the God, or whatever that is, that eternal energy in every moment. I think we're all eternal energies having a human experience. We're all born and we all die, and we really should understand that we're all going to die in the mortal sense. And because of that, we go, wow, it's actually in the scheme of things, we're here for a blink. Just a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And so what are we doing? What are we doing with our blink? How are we spending our day? What's coming out of our mouth? We are what we think too. So take a check on that. Be kind to yourself, be kind to others, and bless. Don't stress.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.